My name is Max.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And you are awaited.
You Are Awaited is a Mad Max Fury Road podcast where Yuri Lowenthal and Travis Sintel watch 4 minutes at a time of the rollicking, raucous action film Mad Max Fury Road, and then we discuss it until we feel satisfied or until the timer runs out, and today it will be the latter. Let's get into it. What a fucking sequence.
God damn it. I
feel stymied by this one, Yuri.
I feel stymied by this one because...
I'm rocking back and forth.
You are rocking back and forth, trying to keep control. Maybe we should settle down
one.
A little bit and quickly decompress after Greg Van Borsum's episode from last week. If you're skipping right to this and you're skipping the guest episodes because you're like, I don't fucking care what a guest has to say... Stop right now. Go
first
back.
First of all, sort your life
first
out.
First of all, yeah.
Check yourself.
Before
you wreck yourself.
Thank you. But go back and listen to the last guest episode, Greg Van Borsum, who worked on the film, who is very much, I think, to blame and to thank for so many of the things that we love about this.
A veritable font of information, R.E. Mad Max Fury Road.
Exactly.
And Happy Feet.
So many inside stories. And working with, you know, about working with George Miller, and just also, it's very much a, you know, a lot of people come up to me and they don't come up to me. It's usually in the form of email or Twitter, and they're basically like, I want to work in Hollywood. How do I do it? And
right.
I'm like, there's no simple. I know you want me to give you the Reader's Digest version that you can read and apply to your life, and it happens for you.
Yes.
But everybody has a different path, and if you want to be inspired by or be completely have your dreams dashed by what it, you know, literally the kind of commitment it takes.
Obsessive commitment.
Listen to the last episode because Greg talks about not knowing anything about anything, but knowing he wanted to do this. And he took the most interesting roundabout way that clearly worked for him.
Yeah. I think no matter what that dude does, it works for him.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the real takeaway is there's no way to do it. There's a million ways to do it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. If you are talented and obsessive, you'll figure it out, you know? And
right.
If he hadn't done it that way, he would have done it a different way with someone else. Like, that's just how that stuff works out. And people who end up having a career, I don't want to use the word make it. People end up having a sustainable career in some capacity, which is the closest you can get to making it.
Yeah.
That's possible. They sort it out. And if it wasn't one way, it'd be another way. So I told my sister this about college. It's not about which college you go to. They're all right. You'll make them all work.
Yeah,
just pick one and go. And put some thought into it. But don't think it's the end of your life or the decision that's going to impact your life the most. Same thing with industry, I think.
Yeah. I would also like to thank you for keeping your shit together during that interview. I felt in listening back to it, I was like, "How about the fury?" And then you came in with these really, you know, smart, incisive,
thanks,
you know, comments, and you generated more. And I was just a ball.
Let me say this: here's the joy of having a co-host is that you've done the same for me, certainly on various episodes. Is that when I see you start to drool and your eyes glaze over, I know I got to hold it together because we got to drive the episode. Because
thank you.
I think the structure of what Greg was doing was good, but he clearly had limitless stories to tell.
Yep.
And we have a limited time. So I thought, well, try to rein in some of this ball of energy. I think it's a pretty good episode, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how interesting it is to hear us listen to us watch videos, but...
But there was precious little... You know, I was worried about that, and then in listening to it, I think we covered it pretty well.
Yeah,
I don't think there were huge dead spaces where you couldn't tell what was going on.
Yeah, I think that's right. We're trying to be like, hey, right now he's showing us this badass thing we can't talk about.
I did come to the realization that I say a lot.
I speak poorly often, I would say, and it is to my eternal chagrin. And I don't know that I've gotten better over the course of doing multiple podcasts this year.
I don't know that now becoming aware of it, if it'll get better or if it'll just put me in my head.
Well, you've been aware of it because you hear yourself every week.
But I've never noticed it as much as this last episode.
You don't do it as much as me.
Really?
Yes.
It seemed like it was everything that I, every second thing that I heard was me saying, starting.
Well, that's a different situation, I would argue, because that was less of a verbal tick and more of a, I'm trying to get in to say something.
Maybe.
And it's, is better than I think than excuse me, which is your kind of your options. Or I'd like to say something. So I don't, you know, verbal noises indicating a desire to contribute, I don't think are verbal tickets.
Thank you for protecting me.
I just care about you.
I know.
But I also believe that as a...
I also would like to commend you for when I said, hey, Greg Van Borsum's in this hotel down by the airport, and you were just like, okay, I'll be there. I'm on my way.
Yeah, that's how it happened.
Because we literally got the information sort of as he was flying in.
The joys of freelancing are many and varied.
Right.
And Yuri and I are both, I would say, freelancers.
And they're both strengths and weaknesses, depending on how they fall.
Yes. When one has kids, the weaknesses become more apparent, I imagine, which is reliable income.
Right.
I'll be there at some point, maybe in my life. Okay, so anything else on Greg?
Okay.
Because, I mean, listen, we could spend an hour
decompressing. Yeah, I know, just
decompressing,
unpacking
honestly.
That. Yeah, okay. So this. So we literally start with that beautiful impressionist out of focus painting of the polecats in the distance, showing the how many they've got.
The
threat, presenting the new threat.
Yeah.
Back on track with, here's now a new piece, a new 4-minute piece.
This is the piece, I would argue, just as a way of broadly introducing this. Because, again, same problem I had with the last episode, where there's sort of too much action to cover. Mm-hmm. These are the ones I wish, I'm not being facetious, I wish we did these in 1-minute increments for the action sequences.
I know, because I'm forgetting so many things.
No, we can do them more justice, and I don't think we're going to be able to remember all of the things
that happened. It would help lengthen the podcast if we changed the format of the show.
Well, we could
in midstream.
We could do these by 1 minute. So we're going to try to get through it in 4 minutes. But as a broad introduction to what this sequence is, I would argue, and I need to see what comes next to see if this holds up, but every film has this sort of dark night of the soul moment where all is lost for our characters.
Yeah.
And I would argue that in this 4-minute sequence, that's where this happens. You have all of our main characters in severe peril, the most peril they've been in. Mm-hmm. And who brings us out of the dark night of the soul? It's fucking Nux. That's the character
who brings
us out.
You are right. You are absolutely
right. He restores
the engine.
I really clocked that hard.
Yep, same.
Because every movie that you see has this, some version, not every, but almost every movie
the
you see.
The all is lost moment.
The all is lost, Dark Night of the Soul, this is the moment. And in Lord of the Rings, in Lord of the Rings, for example, it's Sam who lifts up Frodo to carry him. That's where the story changes and the music swells. You know, every movie has the person who brings us out of the dark night of the soul moment, and usually it's the emotional core of the film, narratively speaking. Here, unsurprisingly, it's Nux.
Yep.
And so we'll get to that, but I just wanted to say that up top as a way of introducing the sequence.
Yeah, we might have to go back and forth on this because I'm afraid of missing things, and so as we touch on them, we'll bounce back and forth.
I feel like I have a good grasp of the storytelling parts of this. The details are going to escape me, and there's a lot of fucking badass details in the sequence.
There really are.
But I think I have a good grasp on the character parts of this in ways I didn't on the last episode. So we can maybe bounce back and forth between those. But should we start at the top and work our way through the action?
Sure. We get the polecats.
Polecats come in.
Polecats come in hard.
Yep.
And land on the vehicle and begin. And now the combat begins in earnest on the vehicle. In addition to, you know, the polecats pulling people off.
One of the first things we see in the sequence is one of the polecats who's already landed from the previous sequence, I believe, down between where they're... Oh, so we have some updates for you guys. The three bolts, the woman he tells the three bolts to.
Right.
There's a reason for that. That's incredibly smart.
Right.
Which is, there's four bolts...
But not fully communicated,
Not fully communicated, so we couldn't be expected to know this, but I am excited we get to inform the listeners of this.
Yes, absolutely.
100%. Yuri, more so than me, clocked this moment. He's like, hey, three is a very specific number, and there's a reason for it, unsurprisingly, which is there's four bolts, and Max wants her to disconnect three of them so it can hang on until the...
They're going to save the last one to as they're going through to block the pass.
Really smart strategy.
Great.
Max does that, but we don't understand that as viewers, because how could we?
Right.
So anyway,
smart. Maybe there was a huge long thing where they're discussing it, and when they were editing, they're like,
this is boring.
Sure, that's sort of crucial, but not really.
Also, because it doesn't end up playing.
Right.
That's probably where
right.
they cut
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Exactly. Because they don't end up going with that. Right.
Yeah. Just it's enough to know, and I think they left it in because it's enough to know that there is a plan.
Right.
And clearly, I would argue that that moment communicates that he does have a plan in his head.
Sure.
Which is all, that's the only storytelling information we need to sort of transmit there. So.
Right. Another update that is also a tease to a potential future guest. We are in touch with somebody who worked on the film who designed a lot of the props. And he listened to an episode because we approached him and he said, he listened to an episode of the podcast and he actually said, yes, that is his blood on the map that Max is
making. I've never been happier about reading an email in my life.
I forwarded that email to you faster than I've done possibly anything in my life.
Anything.
Oh, okay.
No, it was...
Good point.
It made me super, super happy because I was like... A, the fact that it's real blood makes me so happy.
Yeah.
In a way I can't even express. And the guy whose blood it is was like, yeah, it's my blood. That's the coolest email to get.
Right. Somebody else could have told us, oh, yeah, that's the blood of the guy who did the...
Yeah.
But
no,
literally the guy who made the map
said,
that's my blood.
Yes. Fucking great. Okay. So all that is to say is that we pick up and one of the polecats is attacking that woman who's dislodging the bolts or removing the bolts from the fifth wheel.
Right. He basically incapacitates her.
Yeah. She knocks her down. Max then comes down, helps her out or whatever. And there's a bunch of... And feel free to chime in if there's specific moments you like. But a lot of polecats landing on the top of the war rig. Max knocking them out pretty fucking badass.
Yeah.
Wise.
Yeah.
And then a guy lands and he's got a shield. First guy we've seen that has a shield. And
love
Yuri, what's that shield?
It's a sign. It's a road sign.
Fucking
it's
road
made out of a road
sign,
which makes total sense and is a beautiful visual moment.
I loved it.
Thank
Does it
you.
Say give way?
Thank you, Colin Gibson.
Give way is the is I'm the assuming,
well,
road sign.
Was it or one way a give way?
I think it's
is
a give way. Way.
Okay. It's probably something strictly Australian. It's not something that we'd recognize.
Yeah, give way, I think, is an Australian... You know, it's when you're merging.
Yeah.
Give way. Who has right away?
Anyway, and I wonder how much thought went into...
Which sign?
Which sign. Because it could have been any of them.
Well, stop is too dumb,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
Give way is a subtler,
is
smarter
it?
Version of stop.
Right.
I think it's holding up a sign that's basically like, you give way to me, it's...
Because I've got the shield?
Yeah.
I would
or because I'm a badass. I don't know.
I'd love to go through all the Australian road signs and see if there was a better choice.
I guarantee that
they
there
was
did.
No better choice.
And there may be a better choice from our perspective, but I guarantee you that they considered
that they
them
chose
all.
Based on
yeah, because it's such a cool idea. It's such an obvious idea. Like by obvious, I never mean that insultingly. I mean inevitable. I wouldn't have come up with it. But when you see it, it's obvious.
Right.
That's the definition
and
of a good
is
idea.
Is in line with the production design.
Yeah.
Of this film.
Correct.
Of cast-off objects, used objects, using everything you've got, that is a piece of metal that is almost already in the shape of a shield and just needs a little help.
Yeah, so great. I think the polecat comes in with... get Zoe Kravitz. Is that
well,
right?
Well, he goes... Well, you see the shield, and he goes for the... He's about to use the chainsaw, I think,
That's
to
right.
get Furiosa.
The chainsaw comes in before, and
right.
then Max
And then Max grabs...
Her?
He grabs the rifle
right.
from the Vivalini on top, snatches it out of her hand. She's yelling at him. He grabs the rifle, shoots the guy in the head before
right.
he's about to
That's right.
chainsaw Furiosa
That's
in the head.
That's a fucking great moment.
Yeah.
That's right. So I hope you
And then he just
that.
Drops it. He doesn't even hand it back to her. I think he just drops the rifle.
No, he didn't drop it. He fucking throws
he
it.
He throws
like
it
a
down.
Boss.
Right.
But this is a great moment because this is really teamwork at its finest. It's Furiosa is focused on driving as best she can. The engine's kind of fucked up.
Right.
She's getting swarmed by all these people.
Nux is off working on the engine.
Nux is working on the engine. And she hears a chainsaw. She can't do anything about that. She has
right.
to drive the truck.
Right.
And then... Pop, get this guy gets popped, falls off, and she's like, okay, that was a
we're
fucking...
glad, right? Glad that didn't.
Whoever saved me, thanks. Right, and then right after that is when the polecat comes in and grabs the crab.
Is that a crab? The crab?
Yeah, the crab.
That's her new nickname.
Yeah, just, the crab.
The crab.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he comes in, grabs the crab.
The crab. Again, latching onto what you just said, Furiosa's driving. She looks at her. It's clearly painful to see her go, but she can't do anything about it.
The wives
kind
of dropped
gone.
The ball here, I think.
Yeah, the wives could have possibly
IMHO,
saved her.
The wives kind of dropped the ball here a little bit. Also, not super sad to see Zoe
Kravitz go. I knew you would say that. I knew that's where this would end.
Well, it had to be said.
Right.
Do you think, this may be touchy ground, do you think now that the people from the film are listening to this podcast...
That Zoe Kravitz is listening to this?
No, I don't think that will ever happen. But do you think they're like... fucking so rude, guys.
Like, is that why we haven't been getting calls back from, you know, the people who worked on the film?
Maybe. I mean, what do you honestly think? Let's just talk about it on air.
I don't think that.
Not appropriate?
No, I just don't think that. Hopefully they don't care. I
hope they don't care, too. I mean, obviously...
I mean, I would argue that some people listen to this and go, why are you being so mean to Zoe Kravitz? I didn't think she was
I would
bad.
Say those people haven't watched the film.
Well,
zing!
There is...
Pow!
There is saying, I didn't like that part of the movie, and then constantly coming back to an almost a personal...
Yeah, it feels personal.
Of a personal attack level.
Yeah. Mostly, I have to say, if I'm being completely honest, that's just for comedic purposes.
Yeah.
It's funny to lean into it.
I don't
have any animosity towards her. Right. But I will say, every time I almost forget, she does something else that annoys me.
That annoys you?
Independently. It's not like, oh, I hate it because it's her. It's like, she does something that's also bad. I'm like, well, fuck, that moment's bad too. Why did you fuck that up too? Because it's who you are.
Because who you are in your soul.
Anyway, she gets taken.
And the first time that we've seen a polecat, yeah, you know, we had the noose around Furiosa's neck before, but nobody was lifted from, nobody was taken from the rig until
Continual
now.
Elevation of ideas.
And then Immortan Joe clocks that and gives the big one.
Yeah.
Like he puts the finger up. He's like, one down, the rest of you are next.
Yeah, it's great.
In a very sort of...
He's a real alpha male, that guy.
Like if he had access to his tongue, because he's got that mask on. He wouldn't have been able to, but I think that would have been him licking his thumb.
Doing
the...
Well, you licked your index finger, you said thumb, which is weird.
Licking your index finger and one... I don't know what that's from. Is it a sport or playing pool or... I don't know what it is, but...
Yeah.
That's one and we're on to the next.
It's
his first victory, really.
True, in the whole film, really.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, we do... And this is George Miller, I think, being very smart about tracking our main characters. Who takes her off the pole? Who the polecat gives Zoe Kravitz to Rictus Erectus,
right?
In the background, so you sort of see it if you're paying attention. That like, okay, cool, that's what that guy is. He's on the car.
Right, they're in the Giga Horse now.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is great. So it helps us track all of our main characters. Instantly, then we're back to our war rig, and I'm not sure if this is where it happens or somewhere else, but I'll just bring it up because it happens at some point that. The seed keeper of the seeds, old Boney, is in the front seat, having been pretty much gaffed last time.
By the hedge clippers.
Yeah, the hedge clippers. She reaches up.
This comes later.
Yeah, this is when she stabs the guy in the eye with a bullet, ?
Yes.
Okay, we'll get it. Sorry.
Exclamation point, but later.
All right, okay, sorry.
Because what happens is we are introduced to sort of... I mean, he's obviously not the leader of the polecats, but this is like polecat badass alpha male number one. He's got the coolest mask,
coolest mask.
In front and in back, because you look through the mask, and it's almost like he's got it, like there's a demon inside there. It's all red. You know, I don't know if that's face paint underneath it, or if it's just the way the mask was made, but it looks, his flesh looks red underneath.
Yes.
You turn around, they give a good vision of the back, and it's that baby face with the nails sticking out of it.
Good. Is that a callback to Thunderdome? Isn't there a baby doll in that movie?
Probably.
In the train sequence when they're talking about the French lesson or whatever. Isn't there a doll in
Makes
that?
A lot of sense, yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong about that, but
You're probably not.
I seem to remember a doll in that sequence.
Although it is this guy's face mask is not at all in line with the other Gastown boys. As we've learned... The whole idea of the gas masks.
Gastown boys.
But
weird, we didn't clock that.
We had to be told that.
There's a Gastown boys gang and a bullet farmer gang. That's the only two gangs we've seen. And what's with the gas mask?
Right, exactly.
We're pros, guys. Don't try this at home. We are professionals, professional podcasters.
But all the other Gastown boys have a lot of the polecat guys have. It's all gas masks.
Yes.
With, you know, fringes and all sorts of things, you know, sticking out. But gas masks. And this guy doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's more like a...
Ceremonial
hockey mask.
Yeah. It's Casey Jones from TMNT.
It's Casey Jones and an Oni, Japanese Oni mask.
Mixed with a little bit of Boba Fett.
Okay.
I think.
So the Boba Cat. Comes in. He shoots Max in the face.
In the face.
Basically, we set him up also as he's the guy with the crossbow. Now we're back to crossbow. We're back to Mad Max 2 Road Warrior territory recurring weapons.
Yep.
And because that was Wes's weapon, I believe.
Wiz.
Wiz. Wiz.
Wiz.
And
sorry, Australians.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know why we go so quickly into that, knowing that it will only end in us looking.
What percent? We can track the percent of our listeners that come from Australia, right? Isn't there a metric for that?
There's, you know, I'm sure if we paid money.
Whatever. Not doing it. But I'm sorry. Anyway, to all the Australians.
We'll apologize every time.
Fuck you. I'm not sorry, you squizzes.
So he's got, basically, he's the guy with the spikes. He's either shooting them off of his wrist crossbow, mm-hmm. or he's got them, you know, or maybe, you know what, maybe those are bolts that he then uses as daggers later.
I think so. A la Legolas in Lord of the Rings.
Well, very well done.
Thank you.
And when we get there, you can you can bring that up in depth.
Great.
But he shoots Max in the face, and Max is saved in an interesting moment.
Let's talk about this.
Let's talk about this, because this is a thing.
This is the first real supernatural moment of the film, I would argue.
Because
it's set up.
It's been set up by a flashback with the girl where she does that, and he does it earlier.
Okay, well, do it verbally so the listeners can remember the film.
Right. She yells Max and puts her... Does she put her hand up? Or no, she puts her hand out.
And he puts
like
his
she's
hand up.
To almost protect himself.
Yeah, against
his forehead.
Palm out, hand against his forehead.
Hand against his forehead. To protect himself from whatever it is she's doing with her hand. Yeah. Now, she's done that in an earlier... We've had that flashback, and he's done it.
Yeah.
And then he just sort of is like, oh, I wonder, what was that about? And now it happens again, and it saves his life.
Yeah.
Because what happens is...
The exact hand motion.
Yeah, the heat, what did we call him? The Boba Cat.
Boba Cat.
Fires his crossbow at Max's face. And in that moment, Max gets the vision again, the flashback. And he throws his hand up, and it stops the spike from entering his forehead.
It goes into
it goes in slightly.
Yeah, it goes through his hand. And it's perfectly done, because it goes through his hand, basically kind of goes into his forehead.
Into his forehead.
But clearly, if his hand wouldn't have been there, it would have gone into his head and killed him.
Yeah.
So it's the perfect amount of like strength in that crossbow fire to indicate to us, like, if this supernatural thing hadn't just happened.
Right.
I fucking love this moment.
So go into that.
Yeah, I love it.
What does it mean? What is the meaning of having that flood? What does it mean for Max?
You know, let me back it up in terms of how I think about storytelling, because
okay.
Game of Thrones goes too far.
Have you finished it yet?
I got bored.
Really?
Yeah, I'm gonna get through it, but I got bored around the end of season 5.
Finish it out.
I'm gonna, because
it's got one of the greatest film battle sequences.
I want to see Battle of the Bastards.
Battle of the Bastards is so good.
That's the main reason I'm staying into it. But I lost interest weirdly. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Game of Thrones storytelling.
Yeah, I really like the moment where there's a very realistic world with slight hints of magic coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I think it opens
Would
up.
You call
a
that magical realism?
All different, yes,
or,
different.
Or actual magic.
I think actual magic.
Okay.
Magical realism is slightly different to me in terms of literary history. But in this, in Game of Thrones, it gets to be too much magic. There's dragons, there's warlocks. But the second someone says, I can foretell the future, or I can inhabit the body of an animal, I'm kind of like, whoa, what the fuck is this? What world are we in? I thought we were in a real gritty world.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, we have a hint of magic.
Right.
Now, Game of Thrones goes too far for me, because it becomes basically, some people are magic. Cool.
It becomes Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah, it becomes Lord of the Rings a little bit, which basically takes the tension off some of the storytelling, because you don't know what's possible.
Right.
And at any point, introduce a new character that
could
be
Or you could bring
mage.
A character back to life. Or,
right,
yeah,
it becomes
that
like
you
a...
thought was dead, yeah.
Hypothetically.
Hypothetically.
So,
a lot of people die. I didn't spoil anything for anybody who hasn't watched it.
I heard Catelyn Stark's coming back. Is she in season 6? Because in the book, she's... way back, the whole series.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she plays Lady Greystone, so she's a different... She basically comes back from the dead and haunts people.
Oh, interesting. No, that has not been introduced.
Oh, I heard there's a room... Anyway, so season 7...
Or maybe I wasn't paying attention.
I heard that may happen in season 7.
Okay.
So, all that is to say is, to me, this is a perfect amount of supernatural in this story. Because we are very much in our world.
Mm-hmm.
We are very much in a futuristic, post-apocalyptic, more or less gritty realism place.
Right.
And
we
that,
set up those rules.
We set
those
them up very
locked.
Hard. Over the course of 4 films.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And,
yeah.
And nothing's been magic before.
Right.
And yet, Max has this moment of legitimate precognition or a ghost saving him or, you know, whatever it is. It's not defined. It's not clarified. It's not dwelled on. It just happens.
Yeah.
And I love it. I think it's such confident storytelling. It's a hint of magic in a world that has none. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. I really like that moment.
Agreed. And I've always, and I haven't dug deeply enough because I haven't come to any sort of conclusion as to what it means for Max. You know, because those memories are not explained, clearly these are people that he's let down, let die, and they haunt him. Mm-hmm. In his head. Now it's maybe more than in his head.
Right. Maybe there's actual hauntings going on. And saved by the people you couldn't save. Beautiful.
Right. So now they've given... So let's try to figure this out, maybe.
Okay.
He has been given a gift by the people he couldn't save. He has been saved by them. That can only change you.
Well, it's part of his redemption.
It's part of his transformation.
Yeah.
From somebody who's just a survivor. So basically, even the people that he let down and let die were able to think beyond themselves.
Right.
And which is something that he has not been able to do.
And I would argue that it's less the impetus for his transformation and more the fact that he's already begun to transform allows this moment to happen, is how
Agreed.
I read it.
Agreed, because his transformation has begun, otherwise he would not have gone after Furiosa and the
exactly.
wives to turn them around.
Exactly.
Unless he feels that the only way for him to survive and go back was if he had them as well, that he couldn't do it solo.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Because honestly, he doesn't need to go back to the green place. He doesn't need the green
place.
It's for them.
And also, like, the movie basically tells us differently. So it may be true internally for that character, but the movie asks us to take a different tack on it. Anyway, great moment. Love it.
Yeah.
He gets saved. And now, importantly,
although you don't see immediately, he throws his hand up and he's down.
Yeah.
Because he's out for a moment. I'm trying to think of exactly where we go while he's out, because something happens.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Oh, I think it's that because after he shoots Max in the head, then he goes in the cab.
Right.
Stabs Furiosa.
Yeah, this guy's a badass.
Because he's fighting with Furiosa.
Yes.
She pushes him off the truck. Was this before?
Happens before, where he gets pushed onto the hood of the truck.
Because he's got her dagger now from the gear shift.
Right.
The stick shift.
Right. Let's just... I don't know when this moment happens. Let's just track it.
Okay.
So this guy's in the hood of the car. Max comes down to... Oh, no. He's about to stab Furiosa. Max pushes him over the opening onto the hood of the car. That's how he saves her.
That's a different guy.
What?
Furiosa is the one who
fucking
gets
damn it
out the window.
Guys, we only watched 4 minutes.
I know. Is it before or fuck? Okay, he goes out the window. He's got her dagger.
You're right.
They're fighting.
Yes.
He goes under the truck, but hangs on. That is clearly shown.
Yes.
Then when he comes back, he stabs Furiosa.
The hood moment happens way before this, though. That I'm pretty confident about.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm just going to say what some things that happen, and we can sort of make sense of them.
You guys can put it back together.
Yeah, figure it out. But there is a moment where Max knocks someone who is about to attack Furiosa, just kind of shoulder charges him.
Yeah.
Knocks him onto the car, and then either falls or dives himself and joins this person on the hood of the car. Mm-hmm.
I think the momentum carries them both onto the...
Okay, that's right. And then Max turns to look at Furiosa. The guy, who I think is bad guy.
I think it's a different guy.
Okay, maybe. But stands up behind, and where it's a nice motivated perspective where we see the guy behind Max. Max is kind of like in a daze, staring at Furiosa, being like, what the fuck did we get ourselves into here?
Yeah.
And then Furiosa sees this guy behind Max about to get after him, and so she slams on the brakes. Mm-hmm. The guy flies off, so she saves his life there.
Right.
Then...
Because, and also, once again, mirroring imagery from previous films... In Road Warrior, there's all the stuff on the front with Wes on the front and the kid on the front of the rig. Yeah, she slams on the brakes. The guy goes flying, but Max gets caught in the whatever that thing is that's
engine
sticking out.
Thing
the
that
engine thing. So there's that. Now, is that when? Because there's so many things. Because now we've got the people in his rig and it's on fire. And we've got Slit coming back with the interceptor.
But do we finish out this hood moment? Because there's another moment with a different guy there that they have a fight or something. God damn it. All right, anyway, there's another thing that happens there on the hood. I don't fucking remember, but it's a thing. So anyway, so let's move on to the interceptor stuff.
So from that point, from the hood of that here's maybe this is some connective tissue. From the hood of the car, from the hood of the rig.
Yes, that's right.
Max gets thrown to the... No, that's later, because it's after she catches him, and then she gets stabbed.
Well, he does go from the hood of the rig to fall off, and Furiosa grabs him. That's right. That is right.
Yes.
Because then Nux is the one that puts him on the other car. So...
Right.
So here... Okay, great. Okay, cool, here we are. So
are we found it back?
I got okay, this. Okay, I got okay. this. So Furiosa, is with her bionic arm, is holding on to Tom Hardy, who right. is hanging. And I say Tom
she
Hardy because
him,
we right. learned later that the harness broke. There's a moment of real pain in her eyes that we see.
Well, but that's, but which I think they use when she gets stabbed by Boba Cat.
Yeah. So while she's holding him, this is now the beginning of Dark Night of the Soul moment for this film. Max is in a perilous situation where he's hanging by basically a bionic thread.
Right.
And we reintroduce Slit in the Interceptor, driving up, who eyeballs
in
Max.
The, yeah.
So he's driving between the People Eater's car and the war rig, right?
Right.
And the Interceptor's coming up, and he basically...
He has a rig as well, and it's on fire. I thought before it was flamethrowers from that side, but it's not.
Yeah,
it's just the rig is on fire.
Yeah, which is badass.
Yeah.
Great. So Slit's coming up, eyeballs Max's the blood bag. He's like, I'm going to fucking take you out. I'm just going to basically hit you
right
now. You're dangling. Max sees it, can't do anything, flailing.
Right.
Around this time, I believe, is where Furiosa gets stabbed.
Correct.
By her own gear shift.
By her own, by Boba Cat, who's now climbed back...
Yeah.
Onto the rig.
He got thrown in this badass action scene.
Yeah, he leans in the window and just fucking stabs her in the side.
Old Boney does.
And then Old Boney stabs him in the eye with anti-seed.
Yeah. Oh, she basically takes what looks like probably a 50 cal or a fucking bullet.
It's definitely more of a rifle or a machine gun. It's a long
stabs
case
him in the eye with a bullet.
Yeah.
God, think about that for a second, you guys. She stabs him in the eye with a bullet.
She doesn't even use a gun. She's like, fuck that.
I got my gun hands.
I'm gonna stab my last moment.
Yeah.
Will be taking you out by stabbing the eye with a bullet.
And
if you think that's unrealistic, then you miss the part where the bullet farmer pulls a bullet out of a tooth hole. And says one for Furio and one angry shot for Furio.
Right, So fuck you if you thought that.
So fuck you. You haven't been paying attention.
Yeah, you don't know jack shit about this movie.
Works.
And then the wives basically grab him and dismantle him.
Yeah.
He's now attacked from all... He's off.
The
wives drop the ball when Zoe Kravitz gets taken, maybe because they want her to be taken.
Right. So maybe they didn't
try as hard as they could have in that scene, I feel
right.
like. But now, when Old Boney stabs this guy in the eye, they are on him. They're like, fuck you,
right.
you jerk. But the damage has been done. Furiosa has been stabbed in the side deeply. And the gear shift is still in there. And so it's all the way up to the hilt in her ribs or side or whatever it is.
Right. So this is where we really hit that...
Dark Knight.
Although, to go back to what you were saying, when in the Greg Van Borsum episode, if you... either forgot it or haven't watched it or listened to it, even though we warned you at the beginning of this episode that you should go back and do that, he said that on the day when they were doing that stunt and Charlize was actually holding Tom Hardy, the rig that they had for that slipped and she was all of a sudden supporting his weight on her shoulder and was in an intense amount of pain.
About to dislocate her shoulder.
Almost.
She's holding his whole... Tom Hardy's a big boy.
Yeah.
She's holding almost all of his weight, if not all.
And you can see that pain on her face when she gets stabbed. I think is the if I remember correctly, Greg
something
said,
like that.
Yeah, that
they used the shot, that
take.
They basically asked her first permission,
and
she's like, "Yeah, she's fucking like, yeah, use looks it. If it looks badass, use it. I'm a badass.
I'm a badass. What's what? So now we're in. So Tom's hanging by a thread.
Yep.
Charlize has been stabbed, which means he's even closer to death because she's the one holding on.
Yep.
Their engines are almost out. Old Boney's dead.
The Interceptor's coming up to kill Max. The People Eater is nearby.
Right. The Krav has gotten...
Around this time... All right, the Krav. The Krav's gone.
Around
this time, either it's about to happen or is in the process of happening. There's a flamethrower coming up to douse the war rig with fire.
Well, here's how I think that works. The Interceptor's coming in. Yeah. I think that the flamethrower...
comes later.
Happens when Max is already driving the people's
ether. You're right.
Because they're flaming their own rig.
Yep. Okay, good. Going back. Okay. So anyway,
but
all
so the interceptors, closing in, Slit's there. It's
It's all lost.
All is lost.
And there's a character we haven't checked in with in a while since we sent him off to do a task. Cuts down to Nux, who's our emotional center of our film.
Right.
And he is doing something about engines I don't understand, but fixing them, certainly.
And all of a sudden restores the... Right.
The engine starts to go.
He's like the Mr. Orange of our... We've forgotten about him.
Yes. Good pull.
And then he comes in and saves the day.
Yeah, so all of a sudden we look at the tachometer, and the engine starts to go. Did I use that word right?
Tachometer? Sure.
That's what it was, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. You're saying that...
Well, I don't know if it's some sort of pressure, or if it's... Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Anyway, one of the engine gauges
Goes
from red to not red.
Yeah, right.
So we know it's fine.
It's technical.
Yeah, it's a technical
thing.
That's just science, folks.
You
guys wouldn't understand.
That's just science.
But it's in red and then not red, which is... It's high in science.
And you literally hear the... Yeah. And then the truck surges, the rig surges
forward. And so then, as if saving the truck wasn't enough, Nux then scurries up to the front of the cab, clocks the situation immediately and says, oh, we have a situation.
Right.
Knows he can't help pull Max up, it's too perilous, but kicks Max in the back and sort of propels him onto the front of the People Eater's rig.
Correct.
Good move, Nux.
Great move, Nux.
Yeah. So now he's freed up Furiosa to basically bleed out.
Not mediocre at all, I would say.
No, not mediocre.
But now he's on the right side.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he scrambles up.
So there's two things happening now concurrently. One is Max is stuck on the hood of this car. A guy stands up with a machine gun, starts to immediately, fire at him. Guess who fucking axes him? Old Boney, dude.
It's Old Boney?
I'm almost positive. Old Boney picks up her shotgun and fucking shoots that guy in the head. Am I wrong?
I think it's another one of the Vivalini.
Fuck. I think it's Old Boney. I'm going to keep that in my head.
Okay. You know what?
Right.
Let's let it be Old Boney.
Based on simple geography of how the cab's laid out, you probably are right. Mm-hmm. But what a good thing if it was her.
It would be.
One of the Vivalini shoots this guy in the head. Max is able then to scramble up. And in a badass way, literally reaches down, grabs a driver by the shoulders, lifts him and throws him out of the car.
Right, by the scruff of his neck and just yanks him out like a weed.
It's a crazy display of strength.
Yeah.
It's a crazy display. And then... leans, puts his feet in, kicks the People Eater in the face,
right,
and slides in the driver's seat. It's a dominant display.
It is. So now they're in control of the two trucks.
Yes.
Now and his is on fire.
Correct. And he's sharing a cab with a very fat man.
With a very fat man. There's probably not a lot of room in there.
He's probably a 400-pound gamer that is doing all the cyber hacking.
Probably.
According to Donald Trump.
Right, exactly. Oh my God. So Max looks over at some point during this exchange. And the wives let him know how bad Furiosa, because he hasn't seen Furiosa get stabbed. Like, she's hurt real bad.
Yeah.
He's got to do something.
Nux gets in, looks down, and looks and sees her wound, and is like, oh.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
Okay, well, here's where we are.
Right.
This is a situation where we find ourselves in.
The People Eater is, stunned momentarily, but then...
We missed the whole moment, Yuri!
What did we miss?
We knew it would happen!
We missed the moment while when the Interceptor gets fucking whacked. That happens before Max is driving that thing.
You are absolutely right.
Walk us through that moment, because the famed Interceptor.
So the Interceptor
for the second time in the Mad Max trilogy.
Right. The last that we left Slit, he was careening off into the... Remember, the driver gets shot, and he goes off into the desert on the hood of the car.
Catches back up,
screaming.
Sees Max is about to hit him.
Right.
Until Nux guns the engine.
Well, is it... No, it's Furiosa.
No. Nux fixes the engine.
Oh, sorry. Fixes the engine, right.
Yep.
The Interceptor is caught now in between the People Eater's truck and the People Eater's rig and the war rig.
Yes.
And he's clearly, making a beeline to fuck Max up.
Yeah,
to run him over with his own car.
Oh, the irony's rich,
Yuri. Guess who's not going to let that happen?
Furiosa.
She leans into the... I mean, she wheels the... I don't know what it's called.
Turns the wheel, and
basically crushes the Interceptor in between the two.
It's a beautiful sequence.
Because it gets caught up in the People Eater's rig's wheels and gets just...
It's sad because it's the Interceptor.
You know what's great about it, though, is that because we've met Slit, and this is the reason why Slit drives that car, is because if it was any other character we hadn't met from his perspective, we couldn't really, storytelling-wise, show the inside of the car the same way.
Right.
But we get this great moment where we know Slit. We understand him, and we see his face as... It keeps cutting between a wide shot, a tight shot of the car, and then a close-up of Slit's face. It's a sort of
It's one of that George
cyclical,
Miller where they just dolly right into his face.
It's like a
face,
cyclical cutting where you're just sort of seeing the fucking vice close on him.
And And you know what I just realized that is a beautiful moment for Slit? He has been trying to drive the car the whole movie. Remember from the very beginning?
Yeah, you're right.
From the very beginning, he gets the wheel, and Nux stops him, and he's like, you're not the driver. And then, you know, he's on the hood of the... They still won't let him drive later. He's got to ride on the hood. He's got, you know, this and that and the other. He's not driving. And he finally gets to drive. This is his glorious death.
It's great. No, you're right. He got it. He got what he wanted. He always wanted to drive a car and fucking die. He drives a car and fucking dies.
He fucking does.
And he drives the Interceptor and dies.
Yeah.
Albeit in a way that's not helpful to anyone.
Right. Okay, true. Nobody, he does not
call it a glorious
advance
death.
His cause in any way.
No one witnesses it really besides Furiosa and Max and
the People Eater.
And they don't give a shit. Yeah, and it's because not a very good
death. They don't care.
No one's like, good death, bro. They're like,
nobody yells witness.
Get out the way.
No, he gets no witnesses.
Yeah, he just screams. And then his face explodes in a fury.
And what does he say as he goes out? Valhalla!
Yeah.
I never noticed that before.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what he said. I'm glad you did.
Valhalla.
I couldn't track it.
So he said, he's happy. Bang it! So you're right. Thank you for...
Sure.
I knew that happened in there somewhere. We missed it.
Yeah.
Right, because you're right. Now, then Nux kicks Max up. But then we have that whole sequence with the
right.
People. So, the People Eater is stunned, but now he's back to his senses. He's got this broom-handled Mauser that he takes a shot at Max.
Crazy he misses that shot.
Yeah, crazy he missed, but he's, you know...
He's a fat idiot.
He's just a dude.
Yeah.
He's not true. He's probably never fired that gun in his life.
Yeah. But he gets shot off.
Max takes the gun.
While driving. Huge rig.
Also, now you've got Immortan Joe pulling up on the other side of the war rig and starts shooting at Max.
Yep.
But Max positions the People Eater in between him. Great human shield. If you're gonna pick a human shield,
the best human shield.
Anyone in this whole movie except maybe Rictus.
Yeah.
I would say the People Eater.
Probably even better than Rictus.
And each time that the People Eater gets shot through the hand, I always think that's Max's hand.
Oh, yeah, fair.
Just the way, because he's sort of, you know...
He also gets a big shot in the fucking eyeball.
Yeah.
The right eyeball gets blown to pieces. It's pretty good.
He deserves it, though.
No, he's a piece of shit. And he went out serving a purpose. He served a purple people purpose.
A purple people eating purpose.
I'm sorry for that.
You've done it once before, and I forgave it then, too.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like I wasn't thinking it in my head.
Well, then it's okay. The purple people eat a purpose.
Everything is okay. Everything is allowed here.
Oh, wow. You are awaited. but just to track the geography of this for a second to make sure I understand. Let's use camera right. Let's use screen right and screen left.
So okay, great.
The war rig's in the center of the screen. As I understand it, to my right, to Furiosa's left, is the rig of the People Eater.
Correct.
And then the interceptor is between those two.
Correct.
On the screen left, Furiosa's right is where Immortan Joe is.
Correct.
And the reason that Immortan Joe is able to fire at Max is that they both pull up ahead of Furiosa.
Right.
And the war rig drops back for a moment. Immortan Joe gets a clear shot at Max, takes a shot. Max uses the People Eater as a shield. Is that all correct?
I believe that is all correct.
That's how you saw it.
We also yes,
great.
I mean the geography, the layout is spot
great,
on.
Great.
We also had touched on it before, but now we're back to it. Somewhere around this point is where, and I think this is maybe why they're able to surge ahead, is the car with the flamethrower.
Yes.
Is now, or let's see. Hold on. Is flame throwing Max the People Eaters, because now Max is in control and they see that.
Yes.
So we got to stop it. So now they're flamethrowering, which is totally a verb.
Flamethrowing
flames?
I think flamethrowering is great.
Is because like podcast, you don't say casting pod, although I have said it on occasion as a joke.
You say it often.
I say it a lot.
Flamethrowering is life.
Flamethrowering.
It's not just throwing flame, it's you're using a flamethrower
to do it.
Right.
So he's trying to stop it, and Max just runs it over, right?
Yeah.
Or is it Furiosa who runs it?
Do you feel like maybe he's flamethrowering the war rig and Max runs him over whilst he's doing that?
Fuck. Now I've confused myself.
In any case, he's flamethrowering one of the rigs.
One of the rigs. And just
one of the trucks
runs
him over. And you see this body fly out. It's crazy. Pieces flying everywhere. It's a badass action crash sequence.
Yeah.
That I really liked. Because there's lots of fire in it.
Yeah. My world is blood and fire.
This is lots of fire.
Yeah.
Also, there's another moment we missed here that I want to talk about.
I knew it was going to happen.
Because it echoes back to a previous thing that we saw earlier. Right when Furiosa reaches in, takes the shiv out of her
side. Oh, yes, yes. Thank you for... Yes.
Right? We then cut to Max taking the spike out of his hand.
The spike out of his hand.
It's just one of those visual echoes that ties our two leads together in such a beautiful nonverbal way.
They do it throughout the movie. Constantly. And it's a great transition.
So, Mark, Greg, these moments did not go unnoticed. I want you guys to know that. These are deep, meaningful
characters. I don't know if this is Margaret Sixel's doing or George Miller's planning.
I feel like you storyboard that.
Brendan McCarthy's doing. I don't know, but it is super smart and a great... You know, you're always looking for interesting ways to transition from one scene to the next scene that doesn't just seem like a cut. Mm-hmm. That's great.
That works totally.
And it keeps the action going.
No, it keeps the action going. It's both relevant and important. It ties our characters together. They both remove these sort of spikes from their bodies. And unfortunately, Furiosa's is lot worse. The wives are now saying she's hurt bad. They basically, the sequence ends with the wives calling out to Max, she's hurt bad.
Right.
She's hurt real bad.
Also, echoing back, because these things are coming back to me as distant memories, I believe in Road Warrior, Max also gets shot through the leg when he's in the rig.
Yes, yes, yes.
And has to use the door to get it out of his leg.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So it's a similar, he uses the door to pop out the...
Great.
I'd never picked that up before, and that's just an obvious one.
Great visual echoes. Just betwixt movies and inter movies. That's not right.
You know... It doesn't matter.
Within this movie and
you guys are with
movies,
us, right? You know what we mean.
You know what the fuck I was trying to say, guys. Don't come at me.
don't give me any shit.
Anyway, so the way the sequence leaves us is Furiosa is real fucked up. She's gotten beat up. She's gotten bruised. Her arm's fucked up from holding on to Max. She's getting shivved in the side in a way that feels, based on the character's reactions, feels fatal.
Right.
We're basically told that she doesn't have much time left. And the wives are like, Max, you need to help her. She's hurt bad. Hurt real bad. Max is driving the people eater rig, and Morton Joe's on the side. Also, we get a nice shot of Zoe Kravitz clawing at the window in a Morton Joe's
giga horse,
trying to get out. It's all very heightened right now, but
we reach another low point.
Yeah.
So the end of this scene has its own low point. In
yeah,
a way.
True.
Not quite as low.
Do get the sense that Furiosa, though she's in trouble, we do get the sense that things are kind of on the upswing, based structurally around how Nux has sort of revived the truck, saved.
Right.
Yeah, and in one 20-second sequence, Nux saves the truck and saves Max,
right,
and saves Furiosa really because she couldn't hold on to him much longer anyway. So Nux saves our three main characters, the truck being one of them.
Yep.
And and moves on. It's really nice.
That's a lot. That's a lot of stuff. And we probably missed half of the stuff that happened.
Yeah. He also comes up wearing a tube or a tire. What's he? He looks at something around his neck when he comes
right.
back.
Right. Yeah. It's probably something from when he was working on the.
Certainly. Don't know what it was.
Right.
He comes up wearing a car part, you guys.
Yeah.
Because it's probably like something obvious.
He was
like
probably
a tire.
While he was down there, he was probably making a necklace for Capable.
I guess so. What a beautiful little man. He's such a beautiful little man. I saw X-Men Apocalypse on a plane recently.
You know, I was tempted to watch X-Men Apocalypse on a plane and still didn't.
That's fine. I think that's a fine reaction.
And?
I think you made a fine decision.
Yeah?
That's how I feel about that.
I watched some of it. The person next to me was watching, and I sort of watched some of it without the sound.
You got it. Then you got it. You understood it.
Okay.
Nicholas Holt, very different character, though. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Taller than you think.
Nothing as good as, and it's linked on. If you go back in the on our Twitter feed, I tweeted it out. Nicholas Holt tweeted a great
Dub Smash
dance thing that they did that was probably better than the whole movie.
Yeah.
So Nick, good job on that. We just stopped at an hour 40. This is what that means. We have 20 minutes left in the movie.
Including credits. So realistically, probably 12 to 14 minutes left.
Right.
3 to 4 episodes left, guys. Of
possibly
content.
5 if we stretch it. If we bring... Joe Lynch said he would come back to do the credits with us.
Right, sure. That would be a 3-hour episode.
Right, that would be right. So we might squeeze a few more out of there. We'll get the guests that we can get.
And then we'll have an off-camera conversation about what to do.
But I'm...
Let me say
terrified.
But let me say something to you, Yuri.
Okay.
When you are awaited, you must one day arrive.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And you are awaited.